This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run, 7:35 right now. I'm Melissa Idris with Julian Ng and Tan Chung Han. Looking at the business headlines to kick off the new week, the People's Bank of China said that the country is preparing to further open its financial sector. And some areas of potential liberalization include the banking sector, insurance, investment banking, securities firms, and payment systems. However, what's interesting is that the central bank also said that any move to open up its financial sector will involve negotiations over how other nations treat Chinese investors.
I have a feeling that this is a kind of posturing that China is putting forward, given the globalization and protectionist rhetoric that we've seen in the last few weeks or so, where Donald Trump is accusing China of, among other things, as a currency manipulator. All accusation, nothing new there. But China has also always been coaxed by the international community to open up the markets, but they are doing it very slowly because they fear the kind of backlash that can happen at home with the yuan and so on. So therefore, recently, we also saw that China is stemming the overseas investments of Chinese companies.
Exactly. And so because when you see this kind of rhetoric coming out from the central bank, you wonder if you got to take it with a huge grain of salt, because it's one thing to say, yes, we're going to liberalize our financial markets. But then at the same time, when you look at the kind of capital controls that they are imposing on their own investors, it really makes you wonder, like, how do you balance out these two seemingly opposing agendas, right? On one hand, yes, liberalize, but hey, Chinese investors, you got to keep your money at home.
Yeah, mixed messages, right? What do you guys think about the fact that the central bank governor said China is very interested to see that Chinese investors, particularly private investors, should get better treatment overseas in other countries?
Well, I think Malaysia is treating them really well.
Yeah, just come over here. I mean, we'll just create a digital master plan after one of your citizens. No problem there. But I think when they refer to the phrase better treatment, is really about how certain Chinese companies, when they want to buy into high technology over there in the United States, they are usually under a microscope and put under the spotlight. There is a general sense of suspicion about what the Chinese is going to do with the technology that's being acquired, whether they're going to use that for military purposes. And I think this is also the same kind of unevenness that Donald Trump accuses China of having, putting up trade barriers in their own country. Now China is accusing the U.S. of doing that and saying that, hey, you don't even give us 100% free access to buying up your tech firms.
Yeah, and then I'm sure those concerns are not just isolated to the U.S. market, right? But also, I mean, when we see the kind of forays that they are making here in Malaysia, those same concerns then arise. So in other words, the yuan or their money basically goes only so far. It's after that. What do you do post-acquisition, right? Do you then actually create the kind of jobs, or do you actually make the kind of needed investments, quality investments that are required, you know, when it comes to post-acquisition? Or is it just, okay, we'll just buy it for the heck of it and then, you know, we'll do whatever we want with it and you guys play no part in it whatsoever.
I think going back to the push for more openness within the Chinese economy, especially by the international investor community, that to China's viewpoint is something that's not so easy to do, because you really need the depth of market to be able to handle that kind of money flows. Mm. And if you don't achieve that in short term, that's not going to be very healthy for the Chinese market. I mean, you guys have seen that the Chinese already were really queasy about the stock market crashing, you know, wiping off $5 trillion from the market. They couldn't handle that kind of thing. But the Chinese, I think, like the other nations around the region, like including Malaysia, they are also more interested in the trade aspects of this openness and of this globalization.
Right.
And in that sense, they form the kind of thing like AIIB, which had the buy-in of many nations last week, and they want to push forward this trade agenda more so than the money flow agenda, the hot money agenda, which can destabilize economies in the short term. Those are the kind of issues that Bank Negara is also grappling with in the short term.
And just to add a little bit to what Julian mentioned earlier with the the trillion dollar trillion
trout.
Trout is something
that's
else.
That's something like some people would go into, like sturgeons and trout.
That is a very expensive piece of fish.
Anyways, fishy matters aside, that $1 trillion route from the Shanghai stock market, for example, I mean, if you look at this Bloomberg article here, on Friday, you've got this company in Hong Kong, Hui Shan Dairy Holdings, fell 85%, 85% in one day. And the thing, and what's, I mean, besides that number, if you look beyond it, it's how little it surprised market participants, you know, whereby this kind of instances have actually happened three times in the past 2 years. So when you have the kind of, you know, a lax attitude towards, you know, their home markets, what more about the global markets, right? Basically extending what you said just now, Julian.
Well, let's move over to what's happening with the OPEC oil deal. So a joint committee of ministers from OPEC and non-OPEC oil producers have agreed to review if the deal to limit supplies should be extended by 6 months. Now, if you look at an earlier draft of the statement, it has said that the committee reports high level of conformity and recommends 6 months extension.
So it remains to be seen whether the existing oil supply cut agreement is effective, because we saw a big push in oil prices after the agreement was made in December. I mean, oil price had that big squeeze up, moving up to above 56 per barrel for the Brent crude. But now it's fallen back down to the $50 level. And this is really a test of those people who are part of that agreement, whether they can take the pain, whether they can keep to this kind, the kind of agreement when prices are so volatile.
Well, you spoke to Jason Schenker, chief economist at Prestige Economics, a little earlier on Market Watch, Julian. Jason is one of the, who has been ranked as an one of the most accurate financial forecasters in the world by Bloomberg. And he said, when you asked him about this deal, he said, well, it depends on if everyone plays ball, right? But Saudi Arabia looks like it is abiding by the rules of the game. But what about the rest?
No, I mean, even though Saudi Arabia is still abiding by the rules of the game, but if you recall, we spoke about this last month. You know, their production has actually gone above 10 million barrels a day. You know, now, granted, it is still keeping in, you know, with the rules, and the excess is still being stored at home as opposed to being flushed out into the open markets there. But at the same time, you know, when you see this kind of, pushing back against the envelope, so to speak, you know, really does, really pose some serious questions. Again, do they have the resolve and will to stick to what they have spoken about, have they agreed to back in December? You know, hence, talk about this production cut deal having to be extended past June.
I think there are also a few factors that would influence whether they will have another agreement. One is the degree to which Saudi Arabia wants to take that leadership, because they are, after all, the world's biggest oil producer. But there are also geopolitical events, I think, that would influence the decision of non-OPEC members like Russia, who's a part of this agreement right now. You know, whether they want to come into this, given that the U.S. is right now on the recovery path, and the shale producers are turning on the spigots over there as well. So, and then China, one of the biggest consumers of commodities in the past, they are also in the process of creating their own strategic stockpile. But at the same time, commodity prices are shooting up. And therefore, the Chinese may want to take stock of what's going on as well.
Yeah, U.S. stockpiles now at its highest in about three decades. But if I can just quote Goldman Sachs here, they released a report just last week, you know, talking about how Saudi Arabia is expected to be an inventory manager more than the price setter or the cartel that OPEC has been so synonymous with. But then looking forward, though, between 2017 to 2019, according to Goldman, they expect to see record production capability coming on stream. In other words, more oil coming onto the market.
Right.
Yeah. You know, so this is a 3-year trajectory here, 2017
to 2019. That's interesting. So let's just say if the OPEC and non-OPEC members agree to an extension, right, regardless of what Goldman says, but if they do agree to an extension of the output cut, would that mean we will get higher oil prices and therefore petrol prices at the pump, which is going to be set on a weekly basis starting this Wednesday, is going to be a lot higher, right?
Well, I think that it remains to be seen because there's 3 months left to the existing supply agreement. Therefore, we would have more empirical evidence at that time whether this kind of agreement works or not. But yes, certainly it has a very profound impact on Malaysia. We have budgeted, assumed an oil price of only $45 for 2017. And right now, the market oil price is trading above budget assumptions. So the implicit assumption is that the government is making money out of this right now. But I also want to see oil price more following more market trends so that we can, plan our budgets better.
It's now 7:45. We'll be back with a look at the local business scene after this on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.